This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is an episode of the Clone Wars Report.
Ken forgot that this is how he starts the show.
That's a nice little jazzy news alert. I'd be happy if I got that kind of alert on my iPhone for breaking news. Indeed. So that is the energy. That's the mood that we're bringing into this episode. We've been having a ton of fun doing these Clone Wars episodes. We are into the second season. We are doing this chronologically. We're discussing individual episodes, or if it is a whole arc of episodes forming a storyline, we are discussing those all at once. The second season is one where the order gets crazy, the difference between the broadcast order and the chronological order. So this is only our second episode about season two, but we are discussing Bounty Hunters, which is episode 17 of season two.
And this is the first one. I was like, oh, that's right. I remember when I first looked at the chronological list a couple of years ago and was like, I have no time for this. I can't.
It's, Yeah, I mean, towards the later half of the run, it smooths out. But this second season, third season is a wild, wild ride. But we're very happy to be discussing this one single episode. Like I said, Bounty Hunters. It is written by Carl Ellsworth, directed by Stuart Lee. And in a rare moment for Clone Wars or lots of Star Wars, at the very beginning, it specifically says, in memory of Akira Kurosawa, the filmmaker who is, of course, extremely influential to Star Wars in general and cinema in general. But this particular episode is a direct homage to Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, which is, you know, it pans out a really great film. You know how it's a revered classic? Turns out it's real good. I had the fun of rewatching it this weekend. I had seen it many, many years ago, but watched it this weekend with my wife, Sarah, and it was really rewarding. So, Ken, what is your sort of Kurosawa relationship or feelings?
It is, like all Star Wars fans, you're very aware of it. As a, in the mid-90s, doing some film screenplay, directing school stuff, you're thinking that was going to be more the path I was going to get into. You know, you watch some of it, you study some of it, and it is as great as advertised. But for me, I just kind of left it there. Not that I wasn't, you know, don't get it, but I'm not a classic film fan, or, you know, I went into other things. And so I'd like to revisit some of those stuff, particularly the Hidden Fortress, which is one I'm less familiar with. And Seven Samurai is a story that's been told other times, Magnificent Seven, all those things. A lot of people looking at Seven Samurai and going, I have an idea. Let me write this down. So I'm a little bit more familiar with that story. But yeah, as all Star Wars fans should at least be aware of the name. We'll start there. And hopefully you can build up from this absolute legend who, you know, I love that story of Bryce Dallas Howard talking about sitting on her dad's lap while Ron Howard, George Lucas, and Kurosawa talked film. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, that is really great. And that makes total sense with your background of beginning the journey to go into film, that you would have studied some Kurosawa. And yeah, it's on my list to watch The Hidden Fortress. It was really fascinating to watch Seven Samurai in preparation for this episode in particular, since I knew it was directly inspired. But it's really great to see the film from the perspective that you and I have had on this podcast over the years, Ken, of really looking at the big ideas of Star Wars, the underpinnings of it. It's easy to look at the Jedi and go, oh, they're like samurai. Yeah, I get it. But to really see some of the deep philosophical ideas that I think were important to Lucas, to see those represented in Seven Samurai. But then it was also interesting to see that in my reading, there are a lot of ideas and moods and possibilities that you can see from Lucas's Star Wars stories coming directly out of Seven Samurai. But it's more interesting that some of the more direct homages of just like images and moments are coming from recently Star Wars storytelling of Filoni and Favreau, who it's almost like Lucas was inspired by the kind of big picture, and not that Favreau and Filoni aren't, but we're seeing more specific images and specific callbacks in a Rian Johnson as well. So that was really interesting to me.
Yeah, it's part of that Star Wars DNA.
That is right. So speaking of DNA, let's get into the DNA of this episode. First, we'll talk about the big picture DNA. Here's my quick summary of the episode Bounty Hunters. The Republic has lost contact with a medical outpost. Sent to investigate Obi-Wan, Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, and Ahsoka Tano discover it's been destroyed by separatists. They are shot down and seek help in a small Felucian village. The farmers there grow healing herbs called Nysillin or Psyllium, but they and their crops are in dire danger. Menaced by a group of pirates led by the wily Weequay Hondo Anaka, the villagers have hired 4 bounty hunters to defend them. But with the arrival of the stranded Jedi, the villagers hope to raise the number of their defenders to a lucky 7. Moral quandaries, violent action, and noble choices ensue.
That's great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That is the summary for this week. But Ken, what is your what's your overall reaction to this episode? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it, feel different this time around? What is your big picture?
Really love that we got to spend some time with it. This is an episode I was aware of and didn't spend a lot of time watching before. And the focus was on some of the surface things, and there's a lot of great surface things in this episode. Just wait till Joseph starts talking about Embo. and there's a lot in Sugi's girl, a lot of great characters, right? But obviously, we're going to have to talk about it. It's kind of funny to watch this post-Mando season one, chapter four, the Sorgan arc, Sorgan episode, which is almost beat for beat the same episode, which everyone pointed out then. and I, after watching this one, and kind of smirking in a fun way of just like, wow, yeah, because I hadn't seen it in so many years. I don't think I had watched this one since maybe 2013, 2014 range. When it, I watched it once on Netflix for sure after it was released. And I was kind of laughing like, wow, this is almost down to the lines similar. So here's how I consider these both cover songs of Seven Samurai. So you might like David Bowie's Heroes. It's an all-time classic. But you might also like, Oasis covering it live. You might like another, and that's how I kind of view these two episodes and this one. It's a very specific kind of cover song of a great story.
Yeah, that's, I think it is really important to mention Mando Season 1, Chapter 4, The Sanctuary, right? Because my enjoyment of that episode of Mandalorian, the first time around watching it, there was a lot I liked about it, but I had a little bit of resistance. Because like, but Bounty Hunters from the Clone Wars, we've seen this. But the thing I appreciated a little bit more about both of them is they, of course, have that just straightforward plot device of Seven Samurai, that it is villagers being defended by a small group. The group itself isn't big enough to defend, so the villagers must learn to stand up and fight, and all of the great morals and ideas that you get into because of that. But in rewatching Seven Samurai and reading a little bit about it, of what time period in actual real world history that Seven Samurai is set in, that it's set in a time of constant conflict, and there isn't a lot of order in the galaxy, and everything is shifting. So any of the sort of forces that might have, larger forces that might have defended a lone village against pirates is not really there. And that's really interesting to think of in the Star Wars context of the cycle of violence, in the cycle of conflict in Star Wars, that the Clone Wars is disrupting things in this specific way. And then go to Mandalorian, that's what Favreau is really interested in, is what is the state of the galaxy when the Empire is gone and the Republic's not quite all there yet, and it's more of these small communities trying to make do on their own. So I appreciated that it is cover songs of the plot, but also both of these Star Wars episodes are a little bit cover songs of how does the small community get affected by the big picture of chaos and destabilization of a larger government.
It's hitting different notes.
Yeah, hitting different notes. But for me, for an episode of Clone Wars, I really like this one. I would say, you know what, I'll say it. I love it. I think that there are so many great arcs in Clone Wars, but this is maybe one of the best, to me, standalone episodes. Like, if a Star Wars fan was like, I'm really not sure, this might be the episode that's like, just go and watch this and try it, because I think it's got a little bit of everything. There is some good comedy and good banter between Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka. There's some good comedy with the Felucians themselves, but there's a lot of heart. There's good debate of Jedi philosophy. There's some great action scenes. And it is a great episode to be small and specific, but it really shows you what the Clone Wars is doing in the big picture by really questioning the war and examining the wars, this big epic war's impact on all sorts of these smaller communities. So I think it's just a great little sample of what Clone Wars can be. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Embo, one of the greatest Star Wars characters ever. I think Embo, to me, is really, really fascinating because the Clone Wars, particularly in its earlier season, is balancing out some of the prequel Star Wars aesthetics with a more original trilogy aesthetics, up to a point of having characters that are a little bit more cute and funny and weird in their design, like the Felucians. But then Embo feels like this real throwback to a cool bounty hunter who talks in a deep voice and, a strange alien language. And it's just, we don't know much about him other than he is an utter badass. So it's just got this great blend of moods and aesthetics that I think the Clone Wars era can really combine well.
Yeah, no, Embo kind of won me over in this episode. Not that he hadn't been before, but I just didn't spend as much time with the character. I think maybe back then the spinning helmet trick, and then we'll talk more about it. But I think back then I would have been like, I don't know if I like that. Now I'm just like, I'd love to see that in a movie. a lot of that there. Yeah. And some of the stuff you talked about here, you know, this is, again, when you go back and kind of look at some older Star Wars content with new eyes or just a new approach or just spend time with it again. I mean, there's some big Jedi philosophy stuff that's brought up here. Like, oh, kind of, yeah. Almost too big for this wonderful little episode to contain, which, looking back, you go, oh, that's what the Clone Wars was doing. That's what the prequel era was doing. You're just maybe caught up with Embo and his spinning head of doom. And love it. And we're going to be discussing that, obviously. I also forgot. I want to say that this episode was so in the back of my mind. But if anyone's ever watched me stream Battlefront 2 on my Twitch channel, every time I go to this map, the Felucian map, I get so giddy with it, just the excitement over those Felucian apartments. And I go up in there and I try to see which one I'd rent. And I kind of always like, where did this happen? I think you even off air once you reminded me, like, oh, there was that Bounty Hunter episode. Some people in chat of it reminded me. So I got really giddy with excitement here. It's like, oh, that's right, the Felucian apartments, because I'd like to move there. This is cool.
Yes, not only the apartments, but the laser protected crops, mm-hmm. of medicinal herbs, so great. And yeah, those apartments, they're so cozy and beautiful in the episode. And I almost do just want, like, pause and just imagine, like, okay, well, I could warm my hands by the fire and then I'd put my television here. But I have lost like two games of Battlefront 2 because I just went and sat in the apartment.
Well, they're so wonderfully designed. They remind me, you know, here it is. It's this very, you know, the Star Wars episode that's going to Seven Samurai, and you might think, you know, samurai and more swords and kind of an older, a more ancient time, right? But the design of these apartments are very futuristic. They're very Disneyland, World of Tomorrow type of pods with a big window. Like, so I love the designs taking from kind of different parts of the Star Wars story, the future of the past, and I love them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they do look like very, very organic, very close to the earth. They are farmers, but there's clearly some tech going on, which is, yeah, great Star Wars stuff. Yeah, other things about Embo, quickly, of another character voiced by Filoni, that cool, yeah, weird, deep voice. And the Embo species thing is really fun, that he is a Kyozo. That is just a direct tribute to Kurosawa, because Kyozo is the name of one of the main characters of Seven Samurai. Mm-hmm. And then he shares a species with the much discussed Constable Zuvio.
Zuvio alert.
Yeah, so I don't think we're close to seeing Zuvio's hat in action, but we almost saw Kyozo big time on the big screen. But tragedy ensued, as we all know. The action figures made it to reality, but not so much Constable Zuvio. All right, so we both like this. We're both interested in some of the fun stuff and the big ideas. So let's get into some of the big ideas. The moral of this episode was courage makes heroes, but trust builds friendship. What did you think of that moral?
First of all, I wondered if this was about Kenobi and Hondo slowly becoming friends over the years. Very interesting. I love it because it's very easy to look at the hero side of it and say that's true. And not that the but in the sentence means friendships are more valuable than heroes or being courageous, but how it's kind of a complete picture and beyond just working together and overcoming differences to unify in a shared goal. Just on a lower level, I love there's everyone kind of has a little conflict and everyone kind of has that conflict with that other person kind of work through. And that's just a good example of how trust can be built to me. This is almost a let's go to a corporate retreat episode. Let's all have a trust fall, and how tying this and that theme to what we see in Rise of Skywalker and Poe saying, how did you do it? Because Poe in his heart's probably thinking, I'm pretty brave. I've done some heroic stuff and that's not working. And for Lando, I'm coming here and go, we had each other. And Lando's an example of trust it had to be earned from him, and they had to earn it from him, and vice versa, all those kind of things. You know, still time to save hat. Lando went through that. And I shot to that scene when I saw this moral of just there connecting to those big things, but also just not that one is more value, but I just don't think, you know, a hero needs a good friend.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that Lando pull is really great, and I think really accurate. And I think it is definitely one of the ideas in the movie Seven Samurai that is, you know, replicated here that we'll talk about, of the great people can fight for you, or we can even teach you to fight. But, you know, one fighter is just a fighter. What it takes to actually get things done is to work together. And I feel like this is kind of the action way to say we're all in this together. And that philosophy matters when it comes to, you know, politics or, you know, food and shelter, but it also matters in battle that we have to all be in this together, or, you know, we're not going to be truly strong enough to do what we need to do. And yeah, I'd love that. Great, great pull on the Lando Poe conversation. But I feel like that's really, to me, what it's about, of this is a reminder that even in something violent and chaotic like battle, we're all in it together. And I felt like it did speak directly in this episode to Obi-Wan and Sugi, you know, learning to work together. And also it for me, it tied in a nice little way to some of the great Obi-Wan and Anakin bickering we got at the beginning of the episode, to go like, are they in sync? You know, like, obviously they're heroes and they love one another in their weird way. But sometimes the bickering goes beyond bickering to being impractical. Like when Ahsoka has to go like, you guys done? Because there's smoke over there and we should just go that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Another moment of Ahsoka going, guys, I know the better way.
Yep. This episode is definitely a laying some stones in the path of Ahsoka Tano kind of episode. So great thoughts on the moral. For you, what were the big themes or ideas that were at stake in this episode?
Along the way, we just kind of discussed it, but common goal stronger than individual pursuits, and that definitely big Star Wars theme, something that's at stake, and something as you look at this supersized galaxy we're even seeing in the High Republic, of just a lot of different folks out there, and how do we believe in we are all the Republic, those kind of things. We get that all through Star Wars. I like the idea. You know, I wrote vulnerability. This is the Serapis arc. Little Serapis, who's very Men in Black kind of character.
Yeah. And by the way, were you okay with that, or will we talk about that later?
Yeah, no, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I do. Yeah, I do love that. Again, sometimes that's why I feel bad for Star Wars. Sometimes my standards are a moving goalpost of what I feel is right. Star Wars. I'm a problem. In an episode that's about trust and friendship, and in a galaxy and a saga and a franchise that needs you to, you know, hey, trust each other, how just on a simple human level, vulnerability to me allows for deeper, honest connections and can lead to your true value and your purpose emerging, and you're part of the greater goal. Serapis wearing this big robot bounty hunter outfit and telling, you know, just straight up dismissing Ahsoka at the beginning of the episode, like, we only see two Jedi here.
Yeah, he says, we don't count you knee high, which is some real projection once you know it's a tiny little guy in this big scary robot.
Yes, and even though in the moment where he falls over when the tree, little tree hits him and he falls out and Ahsoka sees, he tries to stomp away, but, you know, I think that out of necessity a little bit later on, he has to leave the suit, but I think it allows him to, and that's kind of, I just think there's just in a life, in a Star Wars teaching you life lessons, being vulnerable to those around you builds trust and pushes you on to maybe be more comfortable with your true meaning and your true purpose, not to get bumper stickery, but I think that's there. And then we can dive in, but getting involved. I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on Obi-Wan having some issues with helping, because I think he's not right, but I don't think he's wrong. And I think that's part of the fun of this episode. And the big idea, this big Star Wars theme, you've touched upon it, we'll dive into, but defending yourselves, standing up, and how the need, you know, again, trust and friendship makes that easier, and how, but that's also how, to me, in the end, the galaxy wins the day, even going back to episode 9. So big stuff there.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of good stuff. Let's zoom in on that last one you said, because I think that is the kind of the big picture idea of this episode. Ultimately, I kind of thought of that theme. I love that you expressed vulnerability, because I think that it's a big part of it. And that image of you are not your armor, Serapis, is mm-hmm. really powerful. But I think this big picture idea that anyone can be a fighter, anyone can stand up for themselves, right? That's the big picture thing that the villagers learn to defend themselves. And the leader of the village there has that great quote right at the end. For the first time in my memory, my people don't have to be afraid. You know, so we'll talk about the Jedi having their argument about whether they should help. But it feels like the episode comes to this point of whatever that Jedi debate is about, the truth of it, the value of it is they need to learn to defend themselves, because the Jedi won't always be there to defend them. So this great, you know, learn to be the person that you need to be, which I think also has a kind of great tie in, not only to like, yeah, Rise of Skywalker, the idea that it was the galaxy, that our heroes were just the spark and it was the galaxy that actually did what needed to be done. But also kind of ties into this meta message that Lucas, I think, expresses in lots of interviews and convention clips of like, I made Star Wars so you could all be inspired to go and believe in yourself, do creative things, have adventures, live up to your full potential, get past your fears. And sometimes it comes off in this funny way of like, I made this so you just go make your own thing, but you're still here at this convention. Sometimes it comes out in that kind of a funny way, or the it's for 12-year-olds. But I do think there's this like great heart of gold to it, of this idea that it is that Star Wars wants to teach its fans to stand on their own two feet, exactly the way the Jedi and the bounty hunters teach the Felucians to stand on their own two feet in this episode.
Yeah. And, funny, it happens again on the Onderon arc, season 5. A little different outcome, different take, but it's still kind of the heart and soul of what you're saying here. These big lessons, and I love Anakin kind of follows a lot of that up with what I feel is kind of the more powerful answer or thought of just, you know, they can stand up for themselves. They should stand up for themselves, but we need to help them. And that's part of that Star Wars lesson of circles, symbiotic circles.
Yeah, yeah. A couple other things on this just kind of big picture idea of, you know, anyone can and should stand up for themselves. I like Ahsoka's specific quote to Serapis when she sees his actual form of, you don't have to look tough to be tough. That is just some great, straightforward, let's not judge people on their appearance, including let's not judge ourselves on our appearance.
Correct.
And I even thought it is, because it's always a part of the episode that I've been fascinated with, that Hondo can kind of hold his own against Anakin Skywalker, but it's because this damn little Kwakian monkey lizard, Pick Muckmuck, the brother of Pilf Muckmuck, I learned, because Pick Muckmuck is just taking it to Anakin. And, you know, when you pull back at one point, you know, you can kind of put on your Star Wars, how powerful are they hat? And like, a Kwakian monkey lizard is holding back the chosen one. But like, that's the lesson of this episode, right? Of Hondo and Pick Muckmuck are working together, and they're, you know, for a while successfully stymieing an incredibly powerful Jedi.
Yeah. I can't wait to talk some Hondo stuff. I also love, you know, yeah, I don't know. There's that. I still love connecting to that part of Star Wars of the, I guess it's the ranking or the brawling of Anakin lost to a Kwaki monkey lizard. Really?
Yeah, I mean, for a little while there, because the you know, it's the, you know, you don't have to look tough to be tough, and Pick is using his skills. He's, you know, he's not trying to fight him, you know, one-on-one on Anakin's terms. Right. He's, you know, launching onto his face and darting around and, you know, biting at his ankles.
I guess I have to back up my own point is Pick Muckmuck at some point was vulnerable and accepted who he was and knows how to use his skills to win. So valuable lesson.
That's right. Pick Muckmuck looked in the mirror and said, how can I be the best Pick Muckmuck?
Now, which one? This one's Pick. The other one's Mick? What?
Pilf.
Pilf.
I'm sure there is a Mick Muckmuck though.
That's their cousin. He owns a winery over on. That's great.
Yeah. So then to this other big idea, you know, that you wanted to talk about of the Jedi and everything. What I really picked out of it is this overall idea of honor, maybe for lack of a better term. But I feel like we have these basically kind of four factions. I would say that Hondo and the pirates don't have a lot of honor and aren't trying to. But there's this big question of if the bounty hunters have honor. There is question in the Jedi choosing what to do in this situation about what is the honorable right thing to do. And then, of course, there's the question of are the villagers going to stand up for themselves and have that sort of honor? So I like that the kind of the same question is posed to all three of these groups. Does that make sense to you? Are you totally intrigued by that? Or
yeah, totally, because there's one of the good moments is kind of Sugi and Hondo having that back and forth, and Sugi just kind of talking about their honor. And we talk about it a lot. We talk a lot about during Mandalorian of a smuggler, a bounty hunter, or kind of a ne'er-do-well in Star Wars having their own kind of code and honor. And I'm fascinated by that. So great stuff.
Yeah, and I think this, you know, right now, just looking at it, it's like, yeah, it's got some of those Mando themes of like, but this came first, right? This was when bounty hunters were the scum of the galaxy, you know, badasses, you know. So to see them want to say, like, remember, we can't judge people by the fun factions that we've got on the back of their, you know, bubblegum cards, even in Star Wars. And I love, Hondo disparages the bounty hunters as, you know, dishonorable mercenaries. And I love it that Sugi just says, we don't break deals. And, you know, Kenobi, my good friend Obi-Wan, is really concerned that Sugi's plan is just to protect the Sillum and therefore her profit, and has, you know, all that doubt and suspicion. And then, you know, the bounty hunters are true to their word. And even up to, it's not like they're going to stay until it gets a little rough. Embo gets, injured. The other bounty hunter, Rumi, dies, and they really stick to their blasters and do their job. So I feel like this episode is very much about, let's look at bounty hunters in a different way. Sometimes, even though they are just out in the galaxy making money for themselves, that doesn't mean they don't have honor.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because it's Fett and Empire Strikes Back and all of them on the Star Destroyer. I'm not saying bounty hunters are all good folks either, but like, it's weird. I've grown up always kind of connecting them to the dark side. Maybe that's
They're the baddies, right? You know, in the other, you know, they're not, everybody in Jabba's palace is not, you know, a bounty hunter per se, but they are all in that general oeuvre.
Yeah.
And not portrayed as great people, right? They're drunkenly cheering for a Rancor to eat Luke Skywalker. Not great.
Yeah. By the way, also Uvra was the dancer before Ula.
I believe there's also an Uvra Muckmuck, but we haven't met that cousin yet. Maybe someday. So we talked a decent amount here about the Jedi or the villagers having honor, right? And I liked that was the arc there was really the villager Delani, who has got that squeaky voice, extra frightened, gets mad and scared, and leaves the village. But then comes back and spears a pirate, saving Obi-Wan and Sugi. I liked him being that symbol of that journey for the villagers. What did you think of that character?
Very realistic. I love that. That's, you need to have that one. You need to have, you know, if any of us right now are given a gardening tool and told to use it as a weapon, and you've never been in a mass fight, you might step away. And I don't think, and that's part of being vulnerable. It's not a mistake. It's not that you're not brave. It also might be that you're just very smart and intelligent and know what you're up against. And you have to overcome that. That's its own kind of vulnerability. And to come back and realize you make a mistake. This is Han Solo, too, in some ways. And he knows how to fight. So I think it's part of the big Star Wars theme, too. And I like that. It's a little tiny little victory for checking yourself, looking in the mirror, and seeing what's really inside you. And where you really connect and where that honor lies.
Yeah, and I think it ties back to the moral, too, of the more of the Felucians that are there in fighting, the less vulnerable the others are. They're, you know, stronger together. And I think, you know, not just having Delani come back, but having him, you know, show up at the last minute and save somebody is, you know, reinforces that idea that we're stronger together.
Yeah.
So then, Jedi, let's talk Jedi honor, right? There's a lot going on here. We got, as you mentioned, the Ahsoka and Obi-Wan morality debate, where Ahsoka, we are really seeing the seeds of the Jedi that she becomes. yep. or the not Jedi, depending on your point of view, that she encounters people who need help and like, great, problem solved. I will help you. And then Obi-Wan is taking this larger view. It's not that he doesn't want to help the Felucians or sees that it's a problem. Mm-hmm. He says if they, the Jedi, stay, they can't report the medical station destroyed, which is their main mission. So there is a little bit of, you know, he's being the good workaday Jedi who's doing the mission that he was sent to do, and also one that has some bigger picture stakes, right? Because that medical station being destroyed means that other medical stations are probably in risk in their chain of medical stations that we hear about at the top of the episode. And then he specifically says, you know, we were seen, or where he implies that they were seen by the Separatist forces there. So if they stay, they might draw General Grievous and his horde to the village. So Obi-Wan is trying to help and defend the villagers, but from a much, much bigger picture view than Ahsoka. So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, seriously, we joke too, but it's like sometimes the Clone Wars really sets up Obi-Wan to be not a bad guy, but he always seems to be at the center of, well, what about this? Well, that's not right. And I think it's somewhat unfair to Obi-Wan. And I don't, everything you just described, you described it very well, Joseph, where I'm like, he's not, none of what he's saying is wrong. And he's not leaving him in the dust. But that's why, again, I say Anakin and Ahsoka, of course, a lot of credit to Ahsoka here, of course, but Anakin coming back being like, hey, yes, you're right. Let's help them help themselves. Let's do what we can do. Let's do our part as Jedi. We cannot turn our back on this. So I love a great starting point. You know, you got Sugi kind of needling Anakin a little bit later on with the peacekeepers who don't keep the peace. There's a lot of great Jedi stuff going on. But in terms of that specific issue, Obi-Wan just, you know, he's a company man. Sometimes you got to step outside the box. And I think this all goes all the way to Tatooine and New Hope and missions and what am I loyal to? Yeah, a lot of Obi-Wan stuff here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, yes, in the Clone Wars, I think often Obi-Wan is the person who's like, well, here's the reason we can't do the thing that seems and feels right now. And he can be have a little bit of the wet blanket vibe, the wet Jedi blanket, because it's also often the thing that emotionally the audience is responding to, of like, you're right there, help those villagers. But what he's saying does not lack compassion. It's just taking a big picture view of that medical outpost being destroyed and other medical outposts being threatened. It's not just because he's a company man. I do think he is a company man, but it's also like a lot of other people are in danger too. And really like, hey, they can maybe survive the pirates with these bounty hunters. They are not going to survive if we, like, that's really trying to take personal responsibility, which we've seen in other Clone Wars episodes of, like, the Lerman not wanting the Jedi there. Because, like, you're going to bring the Separatists here, you know? And Obi-Wan kind of taking responsibility for that. So, it is a real mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine a villager trying to poke General Grievous with a rake?
Yeah, Anakin's going to have to teach him a lot. But I do really like that this episode starts off with lots of discord between the three of them, mostly Obi-Wan and Anakin, and then Ahsoka trying to navigate it. But then in this moment where they are kind of disagreeing, where, you know, Ahsoka's saying, we should just help them. Obi-Wan's saying, like, but there are these bigger picture things to consider. And then Anakin does come in with, like, well, here's the actual solution that's, you know, somewhere in between. And a little bit more, I think a little bit more Jedi. And I think... great moment for Anakin, because I think this is what the Jedi are about. They do not want to fight unless absolutely necessary. And I think sometimes we talk about the Jedi being wanting to preserve the balance of the Force is this great cosmic thing. But I think it's also like, whenever possible, we don't want to put our thumbs on the scale. We use our power for knowledge and defense, and we definitely defend life, and we will defend life as they ultimately do in this episode. But we'd prefer for you to go about the course of your life. We don't want to be the people who come around and tell every village exactly how they should go about their existence. So if you could handle this on your own, that's the Jedi preference, you know?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the knowledge and defense thing is so key and needs to be brought up a lot when you're measuring the actions of the Jedi, because I can make the argument that these three, Ahsoka, Anakin, and Obi-Wan, could go, you know, knock on Hondo's door and maybe take care of business. And then maybe they come back, and maybe it's going back to what Obi-Wan's saying, but this being more of the Jedi way of truly helping. This is a feed a man a fish stick dinner. He's fine. Get the spread the fish. I can't remember how it goes. You know, it's that kind of thing. And that you're right. It is really more Jedi.
Yeah. Teach them to microwave the fish sticks.
Yeah.
And they'll always have a little bit of regret, but never be hungry. And then I really like that going forward after that kind of discussion of let's train them, and Hondo arrives. Kenobi really works hard to avoid conflict. He tries to pay Hondo for transport off the planet, even double what he'd make for the Sillum. But, you know, Hondo doesn't want the Republic credits. So he's trying. And then once the stakes are clear to Obi-Wan, he goes along with the plan of train him, and he stays because his initial thought is, but we need to get out of here because we're going to draw the Separatists. We're like, all right, no, we'll stay and help. So even though Obi-Wan is being a little bit of that wet Jedi blanket, I think he does come across to do the right thing. Yeah. Ultimately, I think. And then I wanted to talk about this exchange because you and I have fun monitoring these big picture opinions of the Jedi in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And Anakin says, perhaps a condescending way to Sugi, the leader of the bounty hunters, I'm sure you're good at what you do, but you're in way too deep. And Sugi says, said the peacekeeper who fails to keep the peace. And then Obi-Wan, even though he doesn't like politics, has a political opinion and says the rift in the galaxy is not our fault. If more worlds would stand up for themselves against the Separatists, this war would have been over long ago. So what do you make of all that? Do you find yourself agreeing with any perspective?
I agreeing, maybe not so much understanding from Obi-Wan. In the idea of Jedi shouldn't be generals and a lot about that, but I can hear what Obi-Wan's saying of like, we're generals because we have to, because no one else is going to do it in a way. It's a little justice for the Jedi for me. If that makes sense. I just intrigued by his defense. You know, the Sugi and Anakin thing is one of those, burn, sick burn, and some truth to it. But I love that he's just like, Hey, we didn't want to do this. We needed to. And I don't fault them for that. It's just where the slippery slope that Palpatine was pushing everyone down was unavoidable, perhaps, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's that's the fatal flaw of the Clone Wars, right? That they can't see that the whole thing is a pointless trap, and they're too blinded for that. But once they're already embroiled in it, this perspective does make a certain amount of sense to me of, if the justification, flawed or not, from the Jedi of getting involved is defense, right? The Separatists, they built an army and they're attacking planets in the Republic. They're out on the Outer Rim. Now they're pushing in. So we should go. The Separatists can't just march across Ryloth. We should go and defend them. But then every time you go to defend someone, you start fighting a massive war in their home. And there's inevitable casualties, and then they lose that planet, and then they start contributing to this cycle of violence, escalating violence. So I can see how Obi-Wan would go, we wouldn't have to come to each and every planet and bring this larger conflict to all these planets if everybody would stand up to the Separatists themselves.
Yeah. He's not wrong. Maybe not. Not wrong.
Yeah. But it is nice and complex. I don't think there is a specific right answer necessarily, other than I love that these episodes show the complexities of war, mm-hmm. and then really zero into, much like Mandalorian is doing now, zero into what is right when you're looking at it from a more micro perspective of a specific community. And this episode does definitely feel sort of whatever the larger honor of the Jedi is in regards to the Clone Wars, that they do right by these Felucians by helping them to learn to defend themselves, and the Felucians seem overall pretty thankful.
Pretty thankful. And look, it's a life thing, man. It's what are you going to do when you're there? If you got that laser sword and all those skills, and you can be from a distance in your temple going, here's the rules, or here's the better philosophy. But then when you're standing in that apartment, that beautiful little Felucian apartment, what are you going to do? And the answer is never simple. And that's what I love this episode does. It doesn't form a 100% this is the way conclusion. It gives you a picture of what could be. This whole episode to me is Ahsoka going, look, smoke over there. That's the way forward. And this episode's about that. And sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I really like your point too, that if the Jedi were really losing their way, they could be like, all right, well, we'll just go find the pirates' camp and we'll slaughter them. You know, but they don't. They stay and defend and teach the Felucians to defend. We've talked about some of the bigger thematic connections to other parts of Star Wars, other morality perspective. Anything else for you?
I think we definitely love it. We've gone to so many wonderful places. I talked about the Lando moment, the idea of trusting. We talk a lot of trust, but trust who you are kind of trained not to trust is interesting. I look at Kenobi, Jedi, bounty hunter. You know, it's one thing to be like, hey, a wonderful villager, trust me, I'm a Jedi. But and they kind of be like, OK, yeah, I've heard stories of High Republic tales. I've heard tales of Loden Greatstorm. That's easy. That's an easy one in general. But to Kenobi to look across at Sugi and Sugi look across Kenobi and know that they have to find some sort of trust when their whole life has maybe been telling them not to. For right and or mostly wrong reasons. You know, I just like that. That's part of life. That's something that I always say is, you know, when a person, a human or a Zabrak is in front of you, can you trust them? So is that one. And then the big one there, we touch a lot about to the big picture. You talked about what wars do, but I love that through this was mostly pirates and villagers, but I see it also being tied to the Star Wars constant of the resources of the small folk of the galaxy and therefore the small folk. Making them targets and pawns and others' quests for power and control. That's a big Star Wars theme, and it's on display here, right in the spotlight. And I love that.
Yeah, no, I love that. I really thought of that as this conflict between greed and empathy, you know, greed and sharing. That Hondo is, he's funny and scary in this episode, and we'll talk about that. But yeah, he's not after honor. He's just like, hey, you've got something valuable? I will take it to make myself richer. Yeah. It's the straight up, you know, Lucas is so focused and interested in the dark side isn't just, hey, I'm kind of evil today or I'm mad today. It's that constant greed, always wanting more. And then I think it's so significant that that's contrasted with what else is going on in this episode. This episode could have been structured the same with a different reason that our Jedi are in the system and a different thing of value that the Felucians have. But to me, it is meaningful and specific that it is a medical outpost that was destroyed. And because the war isn't going great for the Republic, they have to set up all these medical outposts and they're vulnerable. And then what is it that they're actually making or the farmers are growing is this organic healing herb, you know, this medicine. So to contrast Hondo's just greed, everything belongs to me, versus the Republic, the Jedi, the Felucians, kind of the heroes of the story, are all nurturing and growing things to heal and help others.
Yeah. I like that. That's good.
Yeah. And then my last one is just, I've been having a lot of fun kind of tracking the state of the war itself in the Clone Wars. You get so much information in those great Tom Kane newsreel voiceovers at the beginning. And sometimes you're just distracted looking at the cool visuals or excited for the episode and miss some of the information about the state of the war. I like that this one says Republic worlds are now being threatened. You know, the first season had a lot about how the Jedi were trying to really firm up control of the Outer Rim so the Separatists, and the Separatists wanted control so they could push inward. And this suggests to me, without being explicit, that that's not going great. And the Separatists are pushing into more Republic worlds in the Outer Rim and outside of the Outer Rim. And in fact, again, this whole setup being they've set up a line of medical stations because the war is really needing medical stations. Also doesn't sound like they're just going in and taking droids apart and being done. And it's an interesting note too that chronologically this is the planet where they lost ground in the last arc we talked about.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It's funny, I'm thinking it's like a circle closing in on Coruscant as you go lead to Revenge of the Sith, right? Just literally that's how the Clone Wars is going. Everything's pushing in and it ain't going well.
Yeah, and we know we'll eventually get in the final stages of the war, the Outer Rim sieges, but I'm interested to keep seeing if that drifts away in the Clone Wars or if you can kind of track the bigger military picture of the Clone Wars. All right.
Good history show. No, it's like a good history show of, you know, the Clone Wars.
Yeah, we need that droid in Mandalorian to teach us the Clone Wars history. Just can just sit there in class with our cookies and listen.
Yeah.
That would be great. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss so many great moments in this episode. We'll be right back.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com, that's JENILANDA.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of the great Clone Wars episode, Bounty Hunters. We're going to talk some of our favorite action moments. Ken, what were great, thrilling action moments for you?
All right, I'm going to leave some of the bigger ones for you because I know who's involved. Okay, this is you and I know each other after 5-6 years of broadcasting. But I love this one. I love the classic face-off in the beginning. I got the draw. I got the draw. No, I got the draw. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I like it. It's a tense, almost inaction moment that I love. In action. It's what could happen. And I love a good, and they do it even Mandalorian, I remember chapter 6 in season 1, where there's everyone, you have Bill Burr holding the microphone at everyone. I'll shoot. I just like that kind of stuff. And that one was good. There's some great action all the way through. Serapis, once he's out, I do kind of love him, little old Serapis jumping on and doing his little tricks and knocking the speeder. I like that a lot too.
Yeah, no, that's a great one. And I truly feared for Serapis the first time I watched it. Like, no, yeah. It doesn't seem like he's actually going to knock that weak way out. And then he does the brake tricks, right? And sends him flying. Yes. That is great. I love it's kind of an action moment, but I love the bouncing ball ejector seats. It's just such a weird, great sound. And I love that Obi-Wan sounds truly sick when he's bouncing around in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Embo's stuff is just great. His action it's so Star Wars. It's like, it's very weird and unique in this idea that he's kind of this long, lanky character with a crossbow type blaster. But, you know, his initial run when he first uses the hat as a shield when he's taking down the scout, it's just so cool. And that you see the blast marks come off and you see that there are other scoring from other blasters and get like, oh, he does this all the time. And it's just really fun and really cool. But I also think it's really effective to show like, okay, well, who knows what the kind of skill level of all of these bounty hunters is, but this one is a real terrifying badass.
What I love about like the helmet spin and everything, it is classic Star Wars. Like you say, it's also classic, like, late 90s, early 2000 action figure of this one comes with a ripcord. You pull it and he spins and the hat you know, it's very action figure. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could go on and on about Embo and I will, but perhaps not as much right now. I also like Obi-Wan throwing the speeder bikes into the fence. It's just a great, okay. I love it anytime they use the Force and it's just such a casual gesture of like, you don't fly into me. In fact, fly above me and hit a electricity fence. Great.
I don't know if this is action moment or weirdness, but I do want to highlight Embo like snapping the neck of the spy.
It's brutal, right? Yeah, and I feel like it's there to show that he is a badass. So there is some amount of like physical, you know, prowess to these bounty hunters because Anakin started out doubting them, doubting their actual ability to do this. But then also the honor of the bounty hunters is in doubt. And I think even the fact that Obi-Wan was like, well, cool, that's great, but you just let Hondo know that, you know, the scout's not going to come back and Hondo's going to attack. So you just... Yeah. You know, so there's a lot going on in that.
Yeah. It was especially again, you know, early enough in the Clone Wars run where you're like, oh, I got to hide my 8-year-old. Hold on.
Yeah. And I always watch with the captions so I can see the spelling of things and so I can take some screenshots. And, you know, when you just see neck snaps and Embo's neck snap count in this episode is at least 2. I think it's 2. It's a lot of neck snapping. Did you think it was too much or did you think it was cool or like where were you at with it?
I mean, I'm never going to say I think a neck snap is cool, but it's not cool. No, again, saying, you know, I've known for a long time, but you love Embo. Embo pops up in other Star Wars storytelling, even in the modern era. Sugi does as well. To go back and go back to kind of the first time we spend time with the first moments we spend time with Embo, I really gained the appreciation, and not necessarily to your level, but like I get it now. Where before it's like, yeah, I kind of remember Embo. He had the hat, right? Gene Zuvi. Yeah, okay. But to see an action and see how he's presented with Filoni doing the voice with broken French, intentionally broken French, by the way.
Nice.
The editor, the sound editor, was a Frenchman, and Filoni was like, just give me some words, and I'll say them badly. It all adds up to a really memorable character. So I was glad to come back and spend some time with Embo.
Yeah. And his action pays off. I think that's maybe a part of it is just I know other people of any generation can and do love Embo. But I think for me, growing up with the original trilogy and growing up with those bounty hunters standing there in Empire Strikes Back and wanting to see them in action, Embo is of that style of bounty hunter where he looks cool, sounds cool, And I like a lot of the bounty hunters we get introduced to in the Clone Wars, but even like Rumi and, you know, I like Serapis, but the armor, like, that's fine. That's cool. But Embo could have been standing right there next to Dengar. He fits in that ilk. And that is a part of the reason that I love him so much.
I agree.
All right, let's move on to some moments of comedy, a whimsy, weirdness. I actually think this is a really successfully funny episode.
There's a lot of little beats. I got to admit, I did my notes early. I forgot to write down some of these notes, and a lot of the comedy lines we have already discussed, but I think says the peacekeeper that fails to keep the peace. Like I said, sick burn. I just love it. It's not funny, but you don't have to look tough to be tough is a great Star Wars quote, quite frankly, on a real simple, direct level. There's one big one at the end. So hit me with some of yours, and then we'll get to the one that I think we probably both have that ends kind of the episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The banter between Anakin and Obi-Wan at the beginning is great. And I think sometimes they have banter in Clone Wars where it feels like this is great, but it's the conversations we've heard before. But this one was it's like really successfully funny to me of Anakin saying, "Why do you even ask my opinion? You never do things my way." And Obi-Wan says, "We crash the ship your way."
That's right. Yeah, it's
very snarky Obi-Wan. And then Anakin says, "Very funny. I see your sense of humor survived the landing." And Obi-Wan says, "It's about the only thing."
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such great grumpiness, grumpy, snarky Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And we're kind of seeing it through Ahsoka's perspective. So we get the like, "Oh, wow, why do they do this constantly?" And then, I mean, this is making a lot out of a comedy line, but I'm so fascinated by this larger Star Wars story between Obi-Wan and Anakin that Anakin needed a father and wants to see Obi-Wan as a father or a parent. And even though Obi-Wan's raised him since he was very young, I think because Obi-Wan was young, he always wants to see him kind of a little bit more sibling-like, you know, his brother. And this is sibling banter, you know, that I think almost hurts Anakin's feelings more because it's parental banter to him.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
That may be pulling out a lot, but I really like this dynamic. I really like this relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought that. That was a fun. Yeah. God bless you, Obi-Wan.
Yeah. It's about the only thing. I also liked when Anakin is training the Felucians and he says, "Form up. Divide into rows of five," since they don't know what form up means. And then there's just chaos. The Felucians are a successful design to me where they're like, they're cute and charming and funny and believable when they stand up for themselves. And I just love the like, "We're farmers. We don't know what to do."
I'll tell you what, I'd never want to directly compare the two, this and Sanctuary from Mando Season 1. First of all, I just love Bryce Dallas Howard as a director in Star Wars, and so I don't want to make it sound like a sliding at all. I like this sequence better in the animated version because I think you can get away with a little bit more animated wise, the chaos you're describing, which is really funny. Whereas some of the human stuff, even some of the actors, it's like, you know, I even have problems with like some of the stuff in Game of Thrones and Castle Black. You look at the background, some of the training going on, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what's come on, extra, act like you've swung a sword before. So this one just is more effective, even the humor, but also what they're doing. And I like the sequence a lot.
I think it's a really good insight that you can get away with more. And like, yeah, in Chapter 4 Sanctuary, you know, those of us who watched The Good Place knew that one of the main actors from comedy, so it had an even more delicate balance there. Random Mandalorian opinion here in the Clone Wars. I like Cerberus's line of, "Don't look, I'm having a suit malfunction." Is funny, and I think, you know, might have some relationship to the term wardrobe malfunction that was spreading around in the 2000s for reasons. One little beat where when the Felucian is getting frustrated and kicks the pole in frustration, it's just a perfect little frustrated comedy moment. And I think I'm so curious what this end beat is for you, so I'll stop there.
Well, let's look, I love Hondo all the way through. I don't know which version of Hondo I like better. Do I like serious, dangerous, murderous pirate, or do I like Uncle Hondo that shows up in Rebels? Or quite frankly, the Galaxy's Edge Hondo we've all spent some time with if you've been fortunate enough to go over to the park. I don't know. I like them all. I do love Hondo. And I have a good friend, Joey Rockenstein, who was back in the Jedi Alliance days. And he's a Star Wars fan, but he's specifically just a big Clone Wars fan. And he loves Hondo. Loves Hondo, and I want to follow with him. Like, which version of Hondo, though? I don't know. I love everything about Hondo in this episode, but he's not a good dude in Clone Wars. is. Rebels, he's a little different. He's life has changed. He's tempered, I guess, a little older. He's not a good dude, but I love this effort is no longer profitable. I want to use that in life now.
Oh, yeah. No, that it is a great line, and it is definitely set up as comedy because, and I think it works because it has been this journey about honor, you know? And is he going to say something? Is he going to learn something? Because it's kind of a hero shot, though, you know, it's shot from beneath and he is making a proclamation. And it just, it's funny and it drives home that all of this, you were fighting for your lives, your honor, your perspective on the war, whether bounty hunters can truly be seen in the galaxy as good citizens of the galaxy. I just wanted to take things for money and you've made it a pain in my ass. Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really funny and speaks to the ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. The quotable Hondo. We need that book.
Yeah. The one I wrote down, I really liked Speak Softly and Drive a Big Tank, which is successfully funny. But then, yeah, I mean, this I always think this episode, I thought of this episode when more lovable, avuncular rascal Hondo shows up in Rebels that like, hey, remember when he really took it to Anakin Skywalker and was firing a tank into totally innocent cute farmers?
Yeah. And essentially, you know, kills Embo. Like, that was the original plan. Again, I'm not speaking, I watched the featurettes, kids. I don't just know this stuff. They were going to kill him. And then everyone was kind of like, Dave, why would you kill him? He's a good character. So Hondo would have, he killed Embo. He killed Embo.
Yeah.
Here
yeah. Yeah, and Rumi did die in the attack. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is what I'm coming around to is just, you know, accept growth. Some things happened to him, and he mellowed. He's much more of a lovable rascal, but there is sometimes where you want to be like, Ezra, do you know what he did? Do you know who you know, be careful.
And Hondo would have been like, things happen along the way of life. Never mind.
I had some bad ideas when I was a kid. What are you gonna do? All right, some great comedy moments. Let's talk about any canon and lore connections to other stories. Do you have stuff on your list?
Well, look, I'll tell you what, Anakin is the best pilot in the galaxy. We hear that. We hear Obi-Wan say that. Obi-Wan witnessed it. But also, Anakin always crash lands, and I think that's maybe a little Indiana Jones in a plane. Fly, yes, land, no. And I love that that's Obi-Wan's got that in the back of his mind when he tells that to Luke, you know, even, you know, Anakin's the best pod racer if he finishes a race. so I love that kind of consistency. And Anakin is the best, but he's also kind of crazy and reckless at times and always just kind of lands in butter.
Yeah. And it's a good Ahsoka line too, where she seems like legitimately angry of like, why is it every time we fly, we end up crashing?
Yeah.
What else you got?
I love anytime Felucia shows up, apartments or not. We talked about it before, but I just think I love those connections. We mentioned, I think, on the last week's episode, but just anytime that with Jocasta New and everything, like, where it's like, by this time, like, you're watching this and what you thought was new and unfamiliar becomes a place you really love to revisit. And these new planets and stuff from the prequel eras, from the prequels themselves, where you're just like, you might have come out of the theater going, and what was that weird planet that the Raver Jedi was on? You know? And now it's a place you want to explore more. And that's part of, even with the sequel trilogy, like I always say, hey, take a beat. Get that new song you heard from your favorite artist that isn't as good as the one they released last year. It's going to become just as powerful to you because it's just, that's how life, you absorb it and becomes just a routine and regular. And so seeing these planets show up again, like, oh yeah, I love that world. I love that era. And I love exploring it more.
Yeah, I love this idea of taking individual kind of images, ideas, characters, places in the prequel era and saying, don't just react to them. If Felucia was an album, don't judge Felucia just on its hit single of Jedi Death, but it's got a lot of deep cuts, like Cool Little Farmers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, anything else for you?
Yeah, a couple. Obi-Wan making high price deals for a ride to where he needs to go. All right. That's not
a nice call.
This is Chalmers Cantina right here. This is him going, well, they'll pay it. Don't worry. They'll pay it. We'll pay 10 now or 7 later, you know, like 17. It's the same thing. Like, 'cause Hondo's asking. And Hondo's, it's the same moment. And Obi-Wan's just like, don't worry. You get me where we need to go. We'll pay you. I just need to get there.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we will get a whole episode of that in the Kenobi Disney Plus show of Kenobi hires yet another galactic lift driver to take him somewhere. Good call. I love the aesthetic of the village itself, not just the houses, but, you know, the buildings and those barns. And I like that village gate. Obviously, villages having gates is not a thing that Star Wars invented, but it's cool to see that in the canon of Star Wars is an aesthetic that kind of denotes a little civilization, a little community that's very similar to Nima Outpost and the Kaladin on Corvus and Navarro and everything. So that was just kind of nice to see that image, that idea being in this early Clone Wars episode. I like this line from Anakin. There's one thing I learned where I grew up. If you want to know what a farmer's up to, look in their barn, it explains a little bit of Anakin's motivation. I think Anakin is, especially early on in the Clone Wars, always compassionate and wanting to help people when he runs into people in trouble. But there is that connection to, we always think of Luke is the farm kid because he grew up on a farm. Yeah. And Anakin grew up, you know, as a slave, you know, working on things in a little bit more of a city environment, a village environment. But to see him connect with this idea that, yeah, I'm from the sticks. I'm from, you know, Tatooine is, you know, rural farm planet. And I know that kind of community and I know how they think. It was a cool insight to Anakin. And it comes up later in Clone Wars with Ahsoka saying that Anakin won't talk about his childhood. He won't talk about much where he's from. And he just kind of drips out things like this every once in a while.
Yeah. He's got to be vulnerable. He's got to step out of that armor. Come on, Anakin.
That's right. Don't step into the armor, Anakin. Wrong direction. the ship itself looked very Razor Crest like in the barn, right?
It did, sir. It did. I'm staring up my Razor Crest Lego set right now, thinking you're right.
Yeah, that's really cool, especially since that's been established in the actual history of the Razor Crest ship in Mandalorian, that it predates the Empire. So, and I'm not saying it's exactly one for one by any means, but it's in that general sort of same style of gunship. When we actually get to see the Felucian farmers in battle, their techniques are very Ewok, right? It's very reminiscent of that idea of the invading force might have more skill and technological terror, but, you know, people who know their community can use their community the way that they use the environment-based obstacles and, you know, figure out ways to knock them off their mounts and all that stuff. It's very, very Ewok, I thought.
Absolutely. When those red coats come marching, use your trees around you, all right?
That's right. Use your trees, everybody. And everything else we already talked about, I wanted to bring up Battlefront there. And, of course, Chapter 4, Sanctuary in Mandalorian. But we talked about those, so let's move on to anything that we disliked or questioned in the episode.
Kenobi, I'm always going to point out when I think Kenobi's getting a bad rap. I love Kenobi. He's your guy. Not stepping on that at all, but I do love Kenobi, and I love the potential storytelling. And it doesn't mean I have a problem with anything questioning Kenobi's beliefs or the Jedi Order. I think it's fascinating stuff. I could live in that a lot. I just sometimes always get this little instinctive, like, hey, lay off of Obi-Wan. Right? You know, like, come on.
Yeah, no, I think there are some episodes that are hard on him. But I'm so glad that you are interested in looking out for Obi-Wan. I do love Obi-Wan, but nobody owns these characters except for maybe the people who created them and, you know, the people who legally own them.
They own them.
So please join me on Kenobi Watch. I'm thrilled with that. And it is fun to see because I love him because I think he's complicated and absolutely makes mistakes. And I really like analyzing, like, when did he make a mistake? But I also like analyzing just kind of when is he the stick in the mud? Just because the nature of the way the show is constructed of, like, Ahsoka's our perspective character and she's slowly growing. And Anakin is always going to have this shadow over him of, here's these moments where he's kind and compassionate and attachment is a strength, but oh, here's these moments where he takes it too far. In this episode, there is even that one little moment where it looks like for a second he's mad and he's gonna let Hondo go. So there's these reason to have these spotlights on Anakin and Ahsoka, and in some ways, like, it's like Clone Wars is sometimes that Anakin and Ahsoka are the cool kids, and Obi-Wan's that, like, is he gonna come along too?
yeah
A little bit of that vibe to him, even though I think he has a ton of amazing moments and arcs in the Clone Wars, which we will, of course, celebrate. Yeah. I think for me, the only thing I questioned is, as much as I love that this is just a one shot, there's sometimes when I watch it, I was like, there's so many great ideas and great characters. I wonder if it could have been expanded. Like, I feel like Sugi wins the argument about whether or not bounty hunters have honor because she sees her deal through, and then, you know, she's not like, we hate Jedi, or she doesn't try to, you know, kidnap them for money. And she, you know, says, sure, I'll, you know, you pay me, I'll give you a ride. And we see her barn plan work, because that's a specific bone of contention between her and Kenobi. But sometimes when I watch it, I was like, oh, it'd be great if there was a moment where this idea of her tactics being right, you know, her skills, her honor being right, if we got to see it a little bit more specific moment highlighting that.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. So that's my cutting criticism of this episode, that I liked it so much. Maybe there should have been more. What a jerk.
I got one final beat. One final thing I questioned.
Oh yeah, please.
Okay. We've heaped a lot of praise on Embo, and Embo is great. All right. But here's the thing. If you're fighting against Embo, aim lower, aim for his knees. All right, that helmet, unless he's great at yoga, helmet's not going all the way down to the floor. All right, take him out by the knees. I don't know why I'm rooting for Embo's destruction.
Well, we'll see. You know, man, I'm hoping for some live action Embo. Then we'll see if he gets taken out by the knees. That would be terrible. But good point. Yeah. And the Felucians, really, you know, with their rakes, they are a menace to knees everywhere, those little fighters. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, I do just love the simple structure of just everyone, like I mentioned before, but everyone who's at odds kind of comes to each other's aid, or comes to some sort of a little conclusion of a little arc, you know, Ahsoka, Serapis, and Sugi, and Kenobi. Embo and Anakin. Anakin's the one kind of leaning over him when he's shot and all this kind of stuff. I just like that. It's a little simple structure thing, but it kind of wraps up the episode and all the lessons in nice, tight little packages, like a box of chocolate delivered to your door.
Yeah, that is a really, really good point, that the characters do sort of pair off and go through their little arcs together, which gives it this nice rhythm to it. Only other thing that I wanted to mention is the beasts that walk by right after Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan crash. I looked them up. They are jungle rancors or hunter rancors. I know Felucian rancors pop up in other things, but for one of the things that you and I are tracking in the Clone Wars and Star Wars in general, Ken, is of course the the violence towards beasts. And I love that for once they just stop by and the Jedi are like, we don't want to fight them, and they don't. And it's great.
Yeah. 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 No, they're great. I love it. Just kind of stalking over and they're just doing their thing. Let those rancors do their thing.
Yeah. And they just heighten the tension in a great way. Good job, rancors, for heightening the tension and not having a huge fight with Jedi. If you could have an action figure of any character from this episode, who do you want, Ken?
Well, we're doing a playset, okay? You can get an Ahsoka, an Anakin, or an Obi-Wan in the Bouncy Escape Pod playset. All right? Real, real bounce action. You put your figures in there, 3 3/4, you seal them in, and you can just bounce them. Boom, boom, boom. Do not taunt Bouncy Escape Pod. All right.
Oh, yeah. And I want them to be bounce voice activated so you can hear Obi-Wan go, oh. Exactly. I would say Embo, but I have Embo now. It's so great. He is proudly displayed by my Clone Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi and gives me great joy literally every day. But the other set that I might need is the action pack. You know, a lot of times the action figures make the versus or a battle pack of the two titans who go up against one another. So I want the Anakin Skywalker versus Pick Muck Muck battle set.
Oh, that's a must. Can you do one as a thumb puppet? Maybe both, but maybe both. Maybe it's a thumb puppet set. A thumb wrestler Anakin and Muck Muck.
Yeah, I go for vintage 3 3/4 or finger puppets. Either one is fine. Yep. Either one is good. Next up, we are going to be discussing a two-episode arc, season two, episode 18 and 19, The Zillow Beast and The Zillow Beast Strikes Back. Love that arc as well, and very excited to discuss that one. Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
It's a kind of a life moral or life lesson to when life gets tough, grab your rake and start fighting.
I am going to be trying to grab my metaphorical rake today all day. Anyway, yep. Let's move on. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can also like our Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. You can go get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Don't forget, you can also use that audibletrial.com/Force Center link to try a free audiobook on us. And if you're on Insight Editions website, use that checkout code FC35. Get yourself 35% off things all across their website. You can also support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center, or just tell a friend about the Star Wars fun going on over here. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram at Kednapsock. Go to my website, Kednapsock.com. I'm also over at the Good People Association, Good People GPA. And Joseph, where can they find you and your upcoming live shows?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, I am doing an online comedy variety scavenger hunt show, a weird, fun, we're all in our homes show that is online with the Double Clicks. That ticket link to that is right on the front page of josephscrimshaw.com. So if you're interested, check it out. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Embo's hat, and Delaney's rake, this has been Force Center.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.